Our next case is Google versus Real-Time Adaptive Streaming, 2021-15-45. Mr. Modi, you don't need the mask unless you wish to use it when you're arguing.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So we have an attack on the same patent, but with a different reference.
We do, Your Honor.
Keel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Board erred in finding that the Keel reference does not disclose the tracking limitation of the claims. In so doing, the Board overlooked critical aspects of Keel. Now, Keel's disclosure should have been dispositive and requires reversal, especially in light of the Board's finding that the Keel's queue task TQ in Figure 3 referred to all tasks, including pending requests for data transmission. At a minimum, we believe this Court should remand because the Board failed to consider the alternative arguments made by Google. Let me address each of these issues in detail. I'd like to start with the first issue, that the Keel reference plainly teaches the tracking limitation. Now, if you look at claims 1 and 23, they're very broad. They recite tracking throughput comprises tracking a number of pending requests for data transmission. Now, Real-Time's expert, Dr. Zeger, acknowledged that the 046 patent provides no examples of how pending requests are tracked. In fact, he said, we leave it to one of skill in the art, this simple concept of tracking, and that's at Appendix 1824. He also agreed that the pending requests for data transmission can be tracked either directly or indirectly. You can find that at Appendix 1826. So Keel certainly discloses this tracking limitation in as much detail as the 046 patent. Now, if you look at the specific aspects of Keel, in our view, the Board overlooked two critical aspects of Keel, and I'd like to spend some time discussing those. First, Figure 3 of Keel, which is the figure that we're all looking at here, that deals strictly with a data transmission routine for transmitting a data communication frame. Now, that is key here, Your Honor, and the reason for that is if you look at, for example, Appendix 1503 of Keel, it says that Figure 3 is directed to, quote, the sequential steps for transmitting a data communication frame. The Keel patent also, at Appendix 1502, says that the data compression is done on a frame-by-frame basis. One frame may be compressed, and the next frame may not be. And we believe the reason the Board erred with respect to this is if you look at Appendix 27, which is the Board's final written decision, the Board mixed up the processes in Figure 2 and Figure 3. Figure 2 deals with the PC routine bring-up process. It's undisputed. That only happens when you start up the PC, right? And in fact, their counsel, this is at Appendix 440, admitted at oral argument before the Board that Figure 3 is directed to, quote, setting lines or different values are set. That was what he said to the Board at oral argument, and that's undisputed. So given that the Board basically conflated Figures 2 and 3 in arriving at its conclusion that because PC bring-up routine tasks are also tracked by the processor, that somehow carries over to Figure 3, we believe that was error. Also, Judge Prost, I see you may have a question.
No. I'm waiting for you to get to your APA arguments.
Okay.
Because I mean, this is really complicated technology, and it's really hard to figure out. And I think even if you take your expert's opinion, I think you still need some inferences to be drawn from that opinion, which is why I gravitated more towards your obviousness APA, the one you're challenging in the APA that the Board didn't reach, arguably.
Understood, Your Honor. I'm going to make just one more point on Keel, and then I'll get to those arguments. With respect to the second aspect, and I do think that, Your Honor, the reason I want to spend a little bit of time on this is because I do think it's, in our view, dispositive of what Keel teaches, which is the Table 2 of Keel. And I do want to have the Court look at Appendix 1453, which is the testimony of our expert, Dr. Rodriguez. So now, with respect to Table 2, the Board simply shrugged its shoulders and said, well, we don't believe this testimony. Dr. Rodriguez explained it enough. But if you actually look at the actual testimony, we believe, again, it's dispositive with respect to the disclosures of Keel. So if you look at Appendix 1453, we're looking at paragraph 80, and it's in the middle of the page. This is what the board said. Moreover, the actual data in Table 2 further confirms
that... This is what the expert said.
Yes, Your Honor. Appendix 1453, this is the testimony of our expert, Dr. Rodriguez. He said, moreover, the actual data in Table 2 further confirms that the tasks in queue in Keel correspond to pending requests for data transmission. Specifically, as discussed above, higher thresholds are associated with lower transmission line speeds, which a person of ordinary skill in the art would have recognized is done because lower transmission line speeds would have provided more time for the process to work through the queue. And then he goes on and then explains, consistent with this understanding, the processor task queue, TT, is a single...
My understanding of this is that the board didn't say he didn't say it. He just didn't explain it in a way that made it persuasive. And I guess I don't quite see why that's wrong.
So the reason, Your Honor, that's wrong is two reasons. One is, if you actually look at Dr. Rodriguez's testimony, it's fairly detailed. He did actually go through Figure 2. He explained how Figure 2 worked. He explained how Figure 3 works. And then looking at Table 2... he explained how one of skill in the art would have understood Table 2 in the context of a data transmission, right? And what do we have in response from their expert, Dr. Zeger? He does not actually address Table 2, Your Honor. He does not address this testimony of Table 2. And the board recognized that. It actually asked real-time that at oral argument. You can find that at Appendix 435 to 436. So we do believe that there's enough here. But Judge Prost, I do want to get to your question of the APA violation with respect to the alternative argument. And we do believe, at a minimum, that this court should remand with respect to the board's failure to address the two alternative arguments Google made in its petition. And for example, you can find that at Appendix 104. Google clearly laid out the two alternative arguments. The board actually acknowledged both of these arguments at institution at Appendix 214. It actually agreed. It said one of those arguments was persuasive. And again, you can find that at Appendix 214. And in its final written decision, what does the board do? The board lists those arguments at Appendix 22, but fails to address them with any explanation, much less adequate explanation that's required by this court's case law.
So the two arguments, I think, have to do with sometimes, not always, and the this idea of a modification being obvious. On the first one, I guess as I came to read the argument, including, I think, in your brief here, but certainly below, although it was not meaningfully developed, I understood that argument to be not so much an unwired planet argument, but rather that figure three sometimes would run alone without the processor doing any of the other tasks, such as figure two. And if that's what the argument was, then the board's rejection of the main point about what figure three is, not only data transmission requests, does in fact take care of that point.
So, Your Honor, I would quibble with you on that. I don't believe that's how we looked at it. I think as we explained, of course, in our briefs before the board, and we did cite to Unwired Planet before the board as well, and it was not something that we raised simply on appeal. We do believe that argument goes hand in hand, that if it's practiced some of the time, it's certainly unpatentable under Unwired Planet, under Poverty Integration.
I'm not sure Unwired Planet actually goes that far, but I guess I have come to think that that wasn't actually the argument that the board had to understand you were making, but just forget about everything except figure three, then figure three satisfies the only data request view of things, and the board already rejected that in the main point.
So Your Honor, let's assume if you want to go with that, I still think this court at a minimum needs remand, and here's why. And this goes to one of the arguments we made, that if you actually look at the board's factual findings here with respect to Keel, they actually said Keel discloses that the figure three process, all the tasks are tracked, right, including a pending request for data transmission. So when the board arrived at that conclusion, we think that goes hand in hand with this alternative argument that we made, that if that's the case, then it's necessarily satisfied. This limitation is necessarily satisfied. Again, the board at Appendix 214 found that argument persuasive.
At the institution decision, which doesn't count.
I understood, Your Honor, but I think...
I just want to understand, if we were to agree with a remand, if we affirm the main appeal on the main issue, in other words, we don't dislodge the board's conclusions with respect to figure three, all the board, in order to satisfy whatever you argue is the APA requirement, the board could just say, based on our conclusions on the main appeal, this argument also falls because it's dependent on one of the arguments we've rejected. I mean, that's what it failed. You disagree with what they said about figure three, but if we were to not buy that, that's all they'd have to do on remand that was arguably missing, right?
So, Your Honor, if we go with the assumptions that we're talking about, yes, but not with respect to the second argument, which the second alternative, which is the obviousness argument, right? Where the board, again, did not address that with any explanation, much less adequate explanation, so that this court actually could do its function of reviewing the board's decision. And we do think that argument was actually further, there was more evidence on that issue during trial. Again, the board didn't look at any of this. We spelled this out in our briefing. So, for example, and I think that there's, I want to point to some
my recollection is that you had two sentences on that in your petition. You had maybe a paragraph in the reply, but didn't end up saying in that full paragraph more than the two sentences. And the gist of it was it would be obvious to modify the Keel counting of all requests pending in front of the processor to limit it to only data transmission requests to prioritize them. I don't even understand how that makes logical sense.
So let me try, Your Honor, to explain. So if you look at the way this was set up, we said, well, Keel plainly teaches it. Board disagreed with it. And then we had two alternative arguments. We discussed one of them. The second is the obviousness. And when you look at the obviousness argument, when we went to the obviousness argument, we said, in view of all of the discussion above, at a minimum, one of skill, to the extent you want to say, well, the Keel processor figure three, right, the figure three process, does more than just track data transmission requests, then it would have been obvious to modify that to only limit that to pending requests for data transmission.
And the only reason stated was to prioritize data transmission requests. That's what I guess I don't even understand logically how, if the processor has a long list of things to do, of which 20% are data transmission requests, only counting the data transmission requests prioritizes them, because the processor still has all this other stuff to do before it gets to whatever it's going to get to.
So the reason, Your Honor, that we believe does support our obviousness theory is two reasons. One is, of course, what is the function of this system, right? If you look at Keel over and over, it talks about it's a data communication frame, right? It is directed to transmitting data communication frames. So if they are going to make the argument that these tasks are somehow broader, then one of skill would have said, okay, fine, then I would modify it to only track those requests in the process of figure three. And I think, Your Honor, I don't want you to sort of overlook the evidence from their expert that came in during trial. I do think that's telling what that testimony was, and I do want to just spend a minute on that.
You hardly have much more than a minute left, counsel. You've used well into your rebuttal time. Do you want to save it or continue?
Your Honor, I'll just take 30 seconds and I'll save the rest of my rebuttal time. I appreciate it. So this is at Appendix 1897 to 1898. This is their expert. He said, it's conceivable that you could have a special queue for compressing in Keel. So that goes directly to the point that Dr. Rodriguez was making and Judge Rano that we were discussing. And then this is the last point I'll make, Judge Lori, and then I'll sit down, is that their expert, Your Honors, here said, this tracking concept is, quote, simple concept of tracking. That's what he said. It's at Appendix 1824. And he also said that tracking is something that's readily understandable by a person of ordinary skill without examples. That's at Appendix 1824. So we do think there's enough evidence for this court to send this back and for the board to resolve the obviousness issue. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ron.
Mr. Kroger.
Good morning again. May it please the court. Paul Kroger for plaintiff, for patent owner, real-time adaptive streaming.
Mr. Kroger, the opposing counsel began his brief by asserting that it has standing to appeal. You have not challenged that.
That's correct, Your Honor. We have not challenged it. The case against Google was dismissed without prejudice, which I believe gives them standing to appeal. If I can, I guess, start where my opposing counsel finished with the APA violations and specifically the claim of obviousness. Judge Toronto was correct that the discussion of obviousness was very sparse, both in terms of the their expert's declaration and what was argued in the petition. But what the board found in its final written decision was that Dr. Rodriguez's testimony was conclusory, and therefore it was given little weight. Well, the final written decision may not have directly gone to their argument of obviousness. It did mention it. And the only way you get to that obviousness argument, the only way you can even find that Keel rendered the claims obvious is by considering Dr. Rodriguez's testimony.
On the, let's talk about the motivation issue, which is the last one we discussed with your friend. I guess I'm not sure why that disposes of the board's rejection of the Rodriguez. They cited two things. They cited their argument about motivation, which is, as Judge Toronto pointed out, pretty truncated, but it's an argument there that the board cited. And your expert's testimony, not their expert's testimony, which I don't think the board ever dealt with, right? Did the board ever deal with the comments made by your expert about how a person skilled in the art would have been easily doing this, and there's nothing in the patent that gives any examples? So on those two pieces, why isn't it at least a problem that the board didn't explain why it was presumably rejecting those arguments?
So I think in terms of the modification argument, I believe as Judge Toronto pointed out, what we understood and what they argued was that there would be times that only figure three was running in it.
The second point.
The second one. That's the first one. There were two alternative arguments. I'm dealing with the second one.
Where it would have been obvious, and that's where it would have been obvious to change the patent to prioritize data tasks, I think is what they said. And I'm not even sure what that means, and I don't even know how prioritizing data...
I think they specifically said, even if Keel talks about counting all tasks in the processor queue, it would be obvious to modify that to count only the data transmission requests. And then there's a clause at the end of the one sentence on this that said, because that would prioritize data transmission requests.
Yes, and that was where I started. That essentially parroted their experts, the two sentences of analysis from their experts' declaration in paragraph 80 of Dr. Rodriguez's declaration, which we do believe that the board's final written decision simply rejected as conclusory. We think the board, as the fact finder, said this is conclusory. This doesn't get you there, and that's enough. They try to point, and that would be a lack of substantial. That would be a showing that they did not meet their burden of showing that the limitation was met. They do point to our expert's declaration and deposition testimony. But we don't think that would be sufficient for the board to change its mind, and I don't think that there's any reason for the board to change its mind, given the fact the board rejected their primary evidence, which is of their own expert.
Well, it's not a matter of us concluding that we're going to send it back because it's clear to us that the board's going to change its mind. It's a matter of whether or not the board was required to consider the stuff. That's not the standard
we
use, right?
And specifically because the patent owner bears no burden and didn't need to comport with any evidence at all, what we need to analyze is whether or not petitioner's evidence was sufficient to satisfy the burden of showing the claims being unpatentable based off the arguments that were actually raised in the petition.
So let me just see if I understand you. I think you are correct, although there's just too much paper in this case, that the motive, let's focus on the motivation, which is the second APA argument. Your view is that the board's rejection statements about Rodriguez's testimony being too conclusory and rejecting it, that would cover this motivation argument as well, so that they were dealing with that when they said that?
Yes, Your Honor. That's how we read the final written decision. We believe that's a fair reading of the final written decision. Because the only way you can get to this motivation argument, clearly it doesn't come from the text of Keel itself. The only way you can get to it and the only argument for it in the petition is based off paragraph 81 of Dr. Rodriguez's declaration, which the board rejected as being conclusory.
And what about your expert's comments? Don't you think they were compelling enough to at least warrant an understanding of why the board didn't find them compelling?
Our experts' comments were submitted solely in rebuttal to their experts' evidence. So if they found their expert, and then since they bore the affirmative burden, by their expert not meeting the burden and not presenting enough evidence, at that point I don't think the board is required to consider our experts' testimony.
Well, if your expert makes some concessions, which are arguably at least compelling to support their case, it's incumbent upon the board to explain why it doesn't agree with their observation in that regard.
I don't think so, Your Honor, because in the IPR process, what we're analyzing is the evidence and argument that supports the petition. So if the underlying...
So we certainly have said, I guess I'm thinking of the Ravalma case, mm-hmm. that patent owner's own evidence can actually supply the support for a petitioner's argument, though obviously inadvertently.
And well, we don't think that happened here because, I mean...
So can you address 1897, which I think is the point Mr. Modi principally was about. I might add, put aside the 1824 point about how a second grader knows how to count.
Okay, can you find the site?
1897, I think, was the page. It's the page that I put my little sticky on when Mr. Modi was done.
So if we look at page 1897, this is from Dr. Zeger's deposition testimony.
That's your expert, right?
Correct. Okay. And he was asked some hypotheticals. And I will say here that if we look at his answers, he's clearly hedging. He's saying things, so I wouldn't say it's guaranteed, but it's certainly a reasonable proposition. And that's from page lines 14 to 16 in response to the first hypothetical.
And what is the it that's not guaranteed? But reasonable?
Sure. The question is, if a person of ordinary skill in the art could associate some predictable range of times, if they were told that the 256 bytes of data are going to be compressed, and they were told which compression is going to be used. And I think this relates back to the prior question. Is it your opinion, based on your understanding of Keel, that the frame that's received in 302 is not transmitted? It's not necessarily transmitted. Is that your understanding? So in the record, the only question we have is about this hypothetical. It says that's probably true because they could, assuming they had access to it, and they could do some testing, and they could test out many different types of inputs and see what the min and max times of them are and try to draw some inferences about the sort of range. So I wouldn't say it's guaranteed, but it's certainly reasonable. And the next question he's asked, if we look to the queue that's associated with the process or task threshold, I know that we have a disagreement about the scope of what would be included in that queue, but you would agree that queue, perhaps in addition to other things, in your opinion, could also include tasks for compression, correct? He says, I don't think it's required, but it could, because I could imagine there is conceivably, you have a special queue for, and that's of compression. There could be all sorts of ways for setting this up. I'm not excluding the possibility. Not excluding the possibility is far from offering affirmative evidence of their statement that that you could limit TQ to just request for.
I'm sorry, not that you could, but that you would.
That you would.
Right, and it also doesn't address, does it, anything about how that would somehow prioritize data transmission requests or not? That I must say, that's something of a sticking point for me. I don't understand the logical connection between counting only data transmission requests and prioritizing data transmission requests.
We don't either, Your Honor, and we certainly don't think that argument meets the limitation of actually tracking the number of pending data requests. But having read through this deposition testimony in here, I don't see anything in here that adds any support to any more support to their position, and I think that and so therefore, by looking, you only need to look then at their evidence, not our evidence, and that the board found, as the fact finder, that Dr. Rodriguez's testimony is conclusory, and that should sort of
Well, let me just, but the answer is, I mean, again, we're not deciding whether or not they would have reached a different result, but only whether or not they dealt with it, and so we know what conclusion they reached. But can I take you back to the point you and I were discussing right before this, which is your, what I understood your answer to me to be, was that the board decided Rodriguez was conclusory, and that would also govern the stuff he said about this motivation. I think you may be wrong about that. So maybe, because when you look at Appendix 27, when they're talking about the conclusory stuff, they cite paragraph 78 to 80 of the Rodriguez Declaration. And I think the material we are talking about appears in paragraph 81. So one, am I right about that? And two, if I'm right about that, doesn't that undo the argument you were making to me 5 minutes ago?
So it does not specifically cite to paragraph 81, but paragraph 81 is simply a follow-on from paragraph 80. So it starts with, you know, even if the task in Kiel could correspond to something other than just pending requests for data transmission, a person of skill would have understood there would have been instances in which Kiel's processor is only being used to compress data transmission, and then so on. So I think by rejecting his first conclusions about what Kiel actually meant in 78 to 80, they are at least implicitly also rejecting what he said in paragraph 81 as conclusory, because what happens in paragraph 81 necessarily follows from the discussion in paragraph 80 and would need that as sort of the predicate to understand Kiel and what he's modifying. And unless the panel has any further questions, I'd be happy to see the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Krogan. Mr. Modi has 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Your Honor, just a few points. Judge Prost, you were absolutely right. Dr. Rodriguez's testimony that the board found conclusory was limited to the first issue. They did not address the obviousness argument at all. My second point, Judge Toronto, going to your point.
The second obvious.
That's right, Your Honor. The paragraph 81 testimony that you were looking at. Judge Toronto, going to your point about data prioritization, if you look at Kiel, again, the entire purpose of the Kiel reference is transferring data. I'll point you to Appendix 1501, columns 1 to 2.
I'm sorry, what's the page?
Appendix 1501. This is a Kiel reference at column 1, around line 64. To column 2, line 2, it talks about how it's important to make sure that you compress data only when you need it. And so it kind of gets to the point of why one of skill would want to prioritize certain things over others. And then finally, the point that I'll make is Dr. Rodriguez's testimony. Your Honor, you focused on 1897. We believe that it does support us from 1897 to 1898, because what he said was, he said it's conceivable one of skill would be able to implement it. Just as Dr. Rodriguez said in his paragraph 81. And then lastly, Appendix 1824, I do want to just spend a minute looking at that in the last 30 seconds I have.
This is 1824?
1824, Your Honor. So this is, again, their expert's testimony, Judge Prost, which we believe totally supports our obviousness argument. We asked him at Appendix 1824, line 7, well, my question is, the 046 patent does not disclose how the tracking in this sentence would be performed, correct? Answer, well, the 046 patent does not go into explicit, you know, detail saying that the tracking has to be done in any particular specific manner. It leaves that to a person of skill in the art with their knowledge of the simple concept of tracking. You know, tracking is something that's readily understandable by a person of skill without examples. We believe they are asking this court to require more from the Kiel reference than their own patent discloses, and we believe that's error. This court, at a minimum, should remand on obviousness. Unless you have any other questions, that's all I have.
Thank you, counsel. Appreciate both arguments and the cases submitted.